When the world is calling, whether it's sunny beaches, global cities, or boardrooms that can't wait, getting there starts here. With over 55 nonstop destinations, a new nonstop to Montreal on Air Canada, and 20 nonstop flights a day to New York City, Columbus makes travel simpler, smarter, and closer than you think. Start your trip at flycolumbus.com.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
Well, it raised a few eyebrows.
Raised is.
This podcast contains graphic descriptions that some listeners may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. Now, with that being said, welcome to the Mortal Musings podcast.
Right, let's do this.
Something we were talking about the other day was how we have a very limited vocabulary as a couple. You know, once you're comfortable with someone, or, you know, it could be your best friend or whatever, you kind of weed out the unnecessary words.
Yeah.
And it kind of becomes more efficient to communicate. So we were talking about that. We were in the car and just chatting away, saying that, having a laugh. And then the following day, Neil and I both sat on the sofa eating an apple. And I finished mine. So I got up to discard the core. Instead of saying, "Oh, Megan, I am also done. Could you take my apple core and get rid of it?" He literally looks at me and goes, "Yeah." And I turned, knew exactly what it meant, took the core and walked off. It was, "Yeah." Wasn't it? Yeah. Is that right?
Yes.
"Yeah."
I also got it with someone at work.
Just trying to grab my attention, weren't you?
There's someone we work with and me and her just grunt at each other.
Yeah, I actually made a point with you the other day. I said, "I love your relationship between the two of you." Because it is just like, and then the occasional, "Fuck off."
Yeah. Well,
man of many words, aren't you?
Well, my vocabulary is not very big in general. So you're
it's
lucky
not
to
obtuse.
Get... Sorry?
What?
Yeah. So you're lucky that you get this much out of me on the podcast.
Mm.
Yeah.
You always have a go at me, though. You always say, like, "Oh, you're trying to use a big word." You make me feel like a right pretentious bastard, right? I don't think
she tries
anything...
confusing me with common sense, is what she does. She tries using words I don't know.
No, I don't. I hate when you try to make out that I'm like this manipulative little bastard.
No, right. What she wants is dominance, right? So say if we're having an argument, this is exactly what she does. Fellas, now I'm going to say it. Look out for it with your woman in your life. In an argument, she will use a word that she knows I do not know the meaning of. I'm not going to agree to a word. She could be calling me anything. I have no idea. She wants it, so I either just let it blow past and let her say it, or she wants me to ask, "What does that word mean?" So she has to explain what the word
is.
No,
I don't.
It's like, "You belittle little shit, you know, you thick bastard for not knowing that word."
Not
it's
true
just something
at all.
Else to use in the argument.
It's not, I would never fucking do that. Like, if I use a word and you don't understand. If I use a word and I can tell you don't understand it, I feel bad because I don't want you to think that's what I'm doing. It's never my intention to kind of like try and belittle you or anything like that. But
you know, I'm originally from Sheffield.
I know
that we're called knuckle draggers.
So you're saying I'm subconsciously trying to belittle you.
You should know not to use that word. You should know I will not.
Do you know what subconscious means? What? No, I, honestly, it's
it
never.
Means it's not true.
You said it about me before. No, it means you're not consciously doing it. in the back of my mind, I'm trying to belittle you, but I'm not outwardly doing that. Do you
know
I think
you're outwardly doing it.
I promise you I'm not. I don't think I am subconscious. I'm joking there. But no, you said to me before, and I was like, no, I don't do that. And I'm like, do I? Am I just a pretentious little bastard? Is that what it is?
Thing is, maybe sometimes it has...
We've talked about this before.
Sometimes it has stopped the argument because she'll say something and then she just starts laughing, going, you stupid face.
The thing is, you're saying is if I only, like, exclusively do this in arguments, we'll just be having a normal conversation. And if I say something you don't understand...
Yeah, we could be watching a movie and she'd be like, he's benign. And I'd be like, what? What's benign
he's
mean?
He's benign! No, but, like, it's never with ill intent. See how I said that? Wasn't that pretentious sounding?
I just always constantly feel like Phoebe and Joey from Friends. You know, it's just...
Who am I then, Chandler?
I feel like Joey in the episode where he's learning everything in the V section.
Yeah, Vesuvius.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I'm just sat there nodding along. Oh, yeah, I understand.
See, I'll just turn some. If someone uses a word, I don't know, I'll just say, what does that mean?
See, I'm not selling myself very well to say I'm going on stage in London very soon to do a game show on knowledge.
Mm.
No one's going to pick my answers.
No, but I mean, I'm just as nervous as you, I think. You're more easygoing. So if you get something wrong, you'll be like...
I'm not nervous about going on stage.
I am. I'm terrified.
But I've been doing, we've done... What, nearly 90 episodes of true crime. You've made me sit down and watch true crime documentaries. Even before we started the podcast, you had me listening to true crime podcasts when we were doing overnight shifts. Esther is going to ask me questions about true crime and I have to give an answer. It's just, I'm not nervous about going on stage.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get anything right.
Yeah, but I'm worried about that as well. You think because I research it, I know everything. I don't fucking know everything.
You do know everything. We've had other true crime podcasters who've been going longer than us message me saying, can you ask Megan on this case, blah, 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 and I'll ask you. Boom, you fire off the answer immediately. The name, the height, the fucking, the shoe size.
Mother's maiden name.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, okay, well, fine then. Maybe I have a certain extent of, what's the word I'm looking for here? Theme of vocabulary, it's gone to shit. I have a certain pool of knowledge. Does that sound good? Does that work?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll go with that. But I don't know, that kind of, I don't know, I feel like there's pressure put on me then to know it. If I don't, I feel like you're going to ridicule me to no end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Well, enough putting me down, as usual. What are we doing today?
Well, today I thought we would talk about deaths in boxing, both in and out of the ring.
This is a bit of me.
That's a bit of you.
Yeah.
So to start with, did you know that there was two boxers by the name of Davey Moore who both suffered premature deaths?
No.
No?
See, so, I'm into boxing. I'll never call myself a boxing expert. I will give my opinion on stuff I actually know.
Yeah, or you may have heard of something, but you wouldn't want to...
Yeah.
You know, it's not gospel.
I think I know a couple. Off the top of my head, there's a couple I'm fairly certain you're going to mention.
Mm-hmm.
But no.
Because you held a gun to me as I was writing and told me I had to cover it.
I did not.
You literally pointed at me. Not the gun now. You pointed at me and said, you better be covering this case.
Oh, that were a while ago. Are you talking about, I don't want to spoil it. Yeah, Irish. Yeah, okay.
So, the first Davey Moore. Davey Moore collapsed in his dressing room following his fight with Sugar Ramos.
They're all Sugar.
They really are.
There's so many.
During the fight, Davey fell back, with his neck landing on the bottom rope. The connection of his neck to the rope caused injury to his spinal cord. Following the fight, Davey was able to get back on his feet, even giving a post-fight interview before falling into a coma for which he never recovered. He died 75 hours later on the 25th of March 1963 at the age of 29. His death would go on to inspire Bob Dylan to write the song Who Killed Davey Moore.
Never heard it. Never heard that one.
You've never heard the song or the story?
Both. But I was initially talking about the song.
Are we doing that thing where you slot a little bit of audio?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll do that.
If I can find it, I'll play
it. It's Bob Dylan, you will, yeah.
Oh. So, yeah, I will find it and I will insert it. Here.
Who killed Davey Moore? Why and what's the reason for?
The second boxer of the same name was killed on the 3rd of June 1988. The incident took place at his home when his car rolled down his driveway. Davey attempted to stop the vehicle but slipped. He was dragged and pinned. His cause of death was listed as asphyxiation caused by a depressed chest. Davey was just 28 years of age.
He tried stopping a car?
Yeah, he was. I don't know if he was on the driver's side or whatever happened, but it started to roll, so he went to stop it.
Yeah.
And,
He had plenty of time to jump out at where, like...
But he slipped.
Oh, okay.
Isn't that wild? Yeah. Two boxers, same name, and pretty much the same age.
Not really, it's a common name.
Oh, okay.
It's, you know...
I don't know anyone called Davey. Obviously, Moore, yes. I live in Ireland.
But, well, Davey is nickname for David.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh.
So, David Moore.
Yes.
Is a very common name.
Forgive me. And I missed that one.
And Davey, I always, very Australian, Davey.
Is it?
Yeah. Like.
Neither of these men were Australian.
What?
Neither of these men were Australian, though.
No, but Davey,
mm-hmm.
as an actual name.
Yeah.
I associate more with like Australian.
I can only think of one Davey off the top of my head, and it's an American.
Off the top of my head, there's an Australian speedway rider called Davey Watt.
Is that solely what you're basing it on?
It could be. It could be. Our Australian listeners will back me.
So, Davey Moore.
Yeah.
Both the former and the latter.
Later.
We've got two deaths, both in and outside of the ring.
Mm-hmm.
The next we're going to be talking about is outside of the ring. Darren Sutherland.
That name rings a bell.
I thought it might. I didn't want to tell you too much until we started talking about it. But, you ready?
That name really rings a bell. Sutherland. Go on.
Described as a gentleman... Well-mannered, intelligent and sensitive, Darren the Dazzler Sutherland was an Irish boxer, but trained in the Ingle gym. Huh? How's that grab you? Yeah? Getting somewhere now, aren't we?
So when would he have been training?
So in the summer of 1998, after two amateur fights, Brendan Ingle noticed a confidence and passion in Darren, and he invited him to train at his gym, but he was also said to have encouraged Darren to continue with his education, which he did.
Okay.
So, summer of 89. So, it would have been a little bit before you were training in the Ingle gym.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you could have crossed paths at some point.
I know the name. Oh, fuck me. What happened to him?
It's a small world. Well, we're going to talk about it, Neil. Don't jump the gun now. So, Darren would later move back to Ireland and train with John McCormack and...
Ah, that's where he went wrong. Moved away from Ingle gym.
Well... He went to train with John McCormack and Jimmy Halpin as recommended by Brendan Ingle. So, I mean,
must have
Brendan...
I been on sauce that day.
Are you making scurrilous accusations about Brendan Ingle?
No, about the Irish.
In 2008, Darren competed in the Olympics, winning a bronze medal for Ireland. After this, he wanted to pursue a professional career. And in October of 2008, he signed with boxing promoter Kelly Maloney. On the 14th of September, 2009, at the age of 27, Darren was found dead in his apartment by his promoter. His death was ruled a suicide, but his family questioned this, and the following year, his body was exhumed for an independent post-mortem. Now, how his body was found was Certainly odd to say the least. Darren had taken his own life by hanging, but his wrists were said to have been bound together.
How's that suicide then?
Exactly. This is all very...
You ever tried tying your own wrists together?
No, I have not. This is all very, very sus, and that is exactly why his family are like, bollocks.
Yeah.
Although Darren was described as being a worrier in general, it was said that Darren had been particularly anxious, suffering from depression in the lead up to his death. Not helped by the fact that he had suffered a cut to his face after clashing heads with an opponent, and the cut had since become infected. It was also thought that Darren had been scared of his promoter. This is something that Kelly has repeatedly denied. Quote, "There are some fighters you shout and scream at. There are some that you might want to put your arms around in comfort. Darren was one that you put your arms around."
Mm.
Joe Dunbar, Darren's physiologist, said that he believed Darren didn't enjoy fighting and that he had an immense fear of failure and letting others down.
I don't think anyone, unless you're a nutcase, I don't think anyone enjoys fighting.
Would you not have said you enjoyed boxing? I know the strategy side of it you enjoyed, but I mean, in essence, it's fighting.
So I got thrown into it for the discipline because I was a little shit.
Mm-hmm.
But I was, it's not, but I was enjoying fighting. It was,
a better way to channel it.
I'm never going to, no. Well, yeah, kind of. But for me, it was, I'm never going to make it with my brain. You know, like, how can I word it? I know
what you're saying. There's a lot of people who are led to believe.
I didn't have anything else. I wasn't good at maths. I wasn't good at reading. I wasn't like.
But again, you were led to believe that. And there's a lot of people, whether it be in, you know, showbiz or sports, who are led to believe that this is all they have.
Yeah.
And it's pretty fucking disgusting.
Yeah, but I didn't know I'd be doing a true crime podcast.
No, I mean, podcaster extraordinaire.
Exactly.
Look at you now. Look at me now, Ma. During an inquest into the death of Darren, a letter wrote by Declan Brennan, a longtime friend and mentor to Darren, backed up the theory that Darren was frightened of his promoter. It detailed how he believed Darren's promoter would attempt to destroy his life through the media if he backed out of his contract. So, you've got that letter, and then you've also got his physiologist who was saying Darren didn't enjoy fighting.
Yeah.
You know, so there's and paired with his anxiety and depression, there's a strong likelihood he was looking to get out of boxing.
Yeah.
During the ruling, Dr. Roy Palmer said that the coroners had to be sure that an individual had, quote, fully intended to take their own life, and that there was sufficient doubt and therefore would not return a verdict of suicide. Quote, "He was anxious. He always tried to be the best and do the best he could. He had a fear of failure, and as somebody said, he was too sensitive and too intelligent to be a boxer." Now, I get the point he's making there. Like we just briefly discussed, you know, people being led to believe this is all you've got.
Yeah.
But fucking hell, it's a bit of a kick in the bollocks to other boxers, isn't it?
Yeah. And like, for me growing up around boxing, all promoters are bastards.
Mm.
All of them. Like, they don't...
You're a tool to earn their money.
Right, so... A good trainer is looking out for your best interest in that ring.
Mm-hmm.
Promoter isn't. All the promoter is thinking about is the money. The trainer's not thinking about the money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for instance, look at the fight with Kell Brook against Golovkin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kell Brook was trouble for Golovkin. He was getting absolutely battered by Golovkin's power.
Mm-hmm.
But he was frustrating him. And if that fight had have gone on, Kell Brook could have won.
Yeah.
But Dominic Ingall, Brendan's son...
Protected his fighter.
Yeah, he threw the towel in because he'd shattered his eye socket.
Mm. I do remember watching
Kell
that.
Kell wanted to carry on.
I remember watching that fight. I think that was actually on my birthday. Was that the fight? There's a Kell Brook fight that was on my birthday.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I remember watching it with you. And it was quite heartbreaking. First of all, his entrance was... You know, I'm not someone who's into boxing, but I've watched a fair amount with you. His entrance was very kind of palpable, you know. So to watch that and all the emotion, and then to see him after the fight, and he was like, I was nearly there kind of thing.
Yeah.
This was a fucking chance I had. And
the bit what pissed me off the most about that fight, I could see why Dominic had thrown the towel in. He was looking after his fight. He's been training Kell since he was a kid.
Yeah, of course.
It was Golovkin being interviewed. Golovkin was in trouble. He was getting frustrated. Mm-hmm. I've never seen him miss so many shots and get hit as much as he was. And in an interview, he said, easier than sparring. That one of the easiest fights I've ever had. And it's like...
Very disrespectful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've always thought Golovkin were a nice guy. And when he said that, I was like, prick. Absolute prick.
Yeah.
I'm so happy Canelo fucking... I'm not happy Canelo, like, really fucking gave him some head trauma. But I'm glad Canelo fucking put him in his place a bit and battered him around.
Tell you what fight pissed me off for a similar type of reason.
I know exactly what you're
going to say. What am I going to say?
You're going to say Joshua against Klitschko.
Devastated. fucking Juan Klitschko and then fucking Joshua. Oh my God, I couldn't stand it.
Yeah.
It was killing me inside. Killing me, Neil. Like you were in the same camp as me on that one. You were just like, fuck's sake though, weren't you?
Well, no. So I remember when we were watching that fight and I constantly kept saying, like, this is why I like watching fights with you, because when you hear me say it, you're hearing it live.
Yeah.
I'm saying what you're going to read on social media and stuff after.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was saying, I've been watching Klitschko for years. His signature punch is his right straight. Mm-hmm. Ask anyone who knows about boxing what the Klitschkos do. They stick the left out and hold the fist.
I know, I always do it to you messing now.
Yeah, and you're blocking them, and as soon as they knock your left, they'll come with a right straight.
And that's exactly what I do.
He didn't do it once to Joshua. Yeah. You count how many right hands he threw. There was hardly any.
I really do like Klitschko, do you know that? He always comes across really well. I hope something doesn't come out after me saying that now. As soon as you say you like a celebrity, that's it.
Yeah, well, it's like I said to you, I would be heartbroken. This isn't a boxer. I would be absolutely devastated if something comes out about Attenborough. If he's another fucking Jimmy Savile.
Careful.
What?
I'm just taking the face like, careful now.
if he's another Savile, that would destroy me.
Yeah, careful now. So back to Darren. After the inquest, a statement was read on behalf of Darren's family. Quote, he was an ambassador for good for Ireland. An Olympian and a young man whose future would have been, as Darren said himself, so bright. It should be that the support mechanisms that exist for amateur boxers should also be there for them when they begin their lonely path on the journey to a professional life. The transition is difficult.
Yes.
It's a very good point.
It is a good point. Like, amateur boxing and professional boxing is completely different.
Mm-hmm. And I think the point being made of, look, whatever the circumstances regarding Darren's death, there was clearly some difficulties he was dealing with in his life.
Yeah.
And please just try and make their fucking lives a bit easier.
Yeah. You could be a top amateur boxer, but you could get in the ring as a professional and get absolutely levered. So when you've got the headgear on, there is some shots I've taken with the headgear on, they would have knocked me out cold if I didn't have the headgear on.
Yeah.
Is that funny?
No, it's just the way he said it and knocked me out cold.
They would.
Yeah.
They absolutely would.
Darren's record stands at 4 fights, 4 wins, all by way of knockout. I wonder what Brendan Ingle's opinion on this was.
Well, he never said it up to me. But the name does ring a bell.
Hmm. Well, by 2009, you weren't still at the Ingle gym, were you?
At when?
2009, you'd already left.
Yeah. But could they not get DNA off the tape around his wrists?
I'm very sus of this whole situation.
It just seems like it was swept under the rug.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, even the...
someone with money.
Even the inquest, you know, like I said, the decision was that we cannot, without any doubt, say it was a suicide.
Yeah.
So... it's still referred to as a suicide, but...
that's mental.
Yeah. Horrible. I hadn't actually heard about this until I started looking into this case.
Yeah.
And I just thought, how... I mean, unless I had and it just slipped my mind.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
An Irishman called Sutherland. Huh.
Well, I'll be damned.
Well, they're usually Murphy, Fitzpatrick, Fitzfuckinggerald, More house.
Jiminy Bibby Bob. What did I say? Bibbidi Bob? Yeah. So we've got one that's in the ring next.
Okay.
Walter Kroot. You familiar?
No.
It was a bit before your time now, to be fair.
1902.
No.
Oh.
Further back.
Oh. No chance then.
On the 6th of December, 1897.
Yeah, a bit before my time.
Walter Kroot and Jimmy Barry met at the National Sporting Club in London. In the 20th round, Jimmy hit Walter with a left to the head and a right to the jaw. Now, you told me about that. You know, basically a one up, one down, and you rattle their brain.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's what happened to poor old Walter.
Yeah.
So after that, Walter collapses in the ring. The following day, he dies. And Jimmy, along with the manager and the officials, were arrested. The charges of manslaughter were later dropped as it was determined that Walter had died of a skull fracture following his fall onto the unpadded floor. Although Jimmy did go on to fight a further 10 bouts, the death of Walter had rocked him and essentially retired him.
Yeah, it's the same as Chris Eubank. You know, he didn't kill his opponent, but he gave him severe brain damage.
Mm-hmm.
And after that fight, like, Chris Eubank still went on fighting. It wasn't the same fighter. He was like, you know, he'd get the boxer in trouble. You could tell the boxer was fucked. And he'd turn to the ref and he'd be like, stop it.
Yeah.
Stop
yeah.
it. I'm not
doing it.
Too
much compassion kind of thing. Yeah.
He's like, I'm not doing it. But I don't think the regulations would be the same back in the 1800s.
No, not so much. I mean, even that sentence to say in the 20th round.
Yeah.
You know? Also, anyone who is unfamiliar with Eubank Sr., I highly recommend just watching like a compilation video of him just speaking on anything. You know, there's one where he's talking about sweets. There's another one where he's eating some chicken and he's just like loving life.
KFC.
Yeah, it was the first time he'd ever had KFC or something.
Yeah, because he doesn't, still to this day, he's not...
Stupendous. Is that what he always says?
Yeah. He doesn't eat junk food.
I'm pretty sure you can find compilations of him just saying stupendous. I'm pretty sure. Do you remember we watched Eubank Sr. on a reality show? It was something where they had to like live in a house in the dark for a week or something like that.
Yes.
And he kept giving out to other housemates for cursing.
Yeah. Yes.
During World War One, Jimmy worked at Camp Gordon in Georgia as a boxing instructor. With a record of 59 wins and no losses, Jimmy holds the record the most wins of any undefeated world boxing champion. We're going out of the ring for this one.
Okay.
Irish Billy Collins Jr.
No, this is the one.
This is a tough one.
This is the one I was telling Megan, you have to include this.
You have to do it, but if you do it, I'm going to be incredibly upset.
If you ever cover boxing tragedies, this is one.
A record of 15 fights, 14 wins, 11 by knockout. Although his flawless record should have remained intact. On the 16th of June, 1983, Billy fought against Luis Resto on the undercard of the Robert Duran and Davy Moore fight in Madison Square Garden.
Davy Moore again.
Davy Moore gets in where water wouldn't.
Roberto Duran, he was a good boxer.
Was he?
Yeah. Solid bastard. Look at his record. I think he was still fucking fighting when he was 60.
So during this fight, do you know who the announcer was?
Buffer.
The legendary Michael Buffer. Also, Muhammad Ali was in attendance that night.
That's not shocking.
Why is it not shocking? I mean, it's a pretty big name. Would you not be excited if you were like coming up in boxing and you're like, oh, there's Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, but he'd have been there for the Duran fight.
Yeah, it doesn't matter though. Still there. He was there during Billy's fight.
Yeah, okay. Got
I saw him there. I saw him in the crowd. Watch the footage, Neil. You'd be excited is my point.
Yes.
You know? Muhammad Ali, mate. Shit all over it, don't you? Luis was said to have been a tough fighter, but not an unbeatable opponent. He was a journeyman.
Yeah. Well, a tough journeyman.
Yeah, a good fighter, but he was what he was.
Yeah, he went world class.
No.
No.
Oh, fuck this guy.
Billy Collins was.
Mm. So as the fight got underway, and it became apparent that Billy was suffering from some fairly significant facial injuries, it raised...
fucked.
Well, it raised a few eyebrows.
Raised his?
His face was bloodied, bruised, and his eyes had become swollen shut. As the fight came to an end after a grueling 10 rounds, Luis was declared the winner by unanimous decision. Luis approaches Billy and he gives him a hug and a kiss. As Billy's father approaches Luis to, you know, show his respect, he touches his glove and notices there is practically no padding.
Yeah. I think he went to shake his hand.
Yeah, he held his glove.
And then he won't let go.
Yeah, you can see his father go, you can see his face go, hang on a minute. And he starts doing that and just pressing like by the knuckles, like, what the fuck? So this is where shit really hits the fan. Billy's father, rightfully so, starts to cause a bit of a scene and draw attention. Like we said, he's holding onto the glove and he starts calling for the officials. Luis at this point is looking panicked and he's desperate for his trainer to intervene and desperate to just get out of this interaction.
Yeah.
It was later revealed that Luis, along with his trainer, Panama Lewis, had made a quarter inch hole and removed an ounce of padding from each glove. His hand wraps had also been soaked in plaster.
Yeah.
Of course, this was illegal, and Luis, as well as his trainer, faced the consequences of both the State Boxing Commission and the law.
See, thing is, though, this wasn't that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about it.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you the process. You'll be in your locker room.
Mm-hmm.
A guy comes in, and usually a corner man from your opponent comes in, and they stand and watch. You get your hands wrapped, tape it, and then it gets signed by the official, and then the glove goes on. So at what point did they soak the fucking? Were they not checked? But
I
this
don't,
weren't that long ago.
I think this was kind of in the lead into it. This was one of the triggering things of we need more regulations.
Yeah.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
On the 1st of July, 1983, Panama Lewis's boxing license was permanently revoked, and Luis had his license suspended for a minimum of 1 year. In the same month, the Collins family sued Luis, Panama Lewis, the fight's promoters, the inspectors, the referee, Everlast, and the Boxing Commission for failing to protect Billy.
Yep.
Now, the case against Everlast was dropped and, you know, it's fair enough. Obviously, they sold the gloves. They can't do anything about tampering after the fact. But ultimately, the courts ruled in favour of the Boxing Commission and the Collins family never received any compensation.
You're joking?
No. Completely fucked over. In 1986, Luis and Panama Lewis were convicted of assault, criminal possession of a weapon, and conspiracy. Luis was sentenced to 3 years, and Panama Lewis received 6 years for his part in the crime. But the results of their actions produced a much more devastating blow to Billy. Billy's injuries included a broken nose, torn iris, and permanent damage to his eyesight. At just the age of 21, Billy's career was over. On the 6th of March, 1984, Billy passed away after crashing his car into a culvert. It's widely believed that this crash was deliberate, that Billy had made the decision to take his own life.
Well, it was either deliberate or his eyesight were fucked. He had permanent damage to his eyesight.
That could well be the case, but a lot of people believe, like I said, it was deliberate and that Billy had made the decision to take his own life, that he was struggling to come to terms with the reality that he would never fight again, that the future he had hoped for had been stolen from him.
I wasn't trying to be funny as well about his eyesight.
No, it's a valid point.
Imagine if he was a bright light.
Would he have been able to drive legally?
Yeah.
I don't actually know how severe you know, in terms of like, you may not be able to box again, but I don't know.
Yeah. The worst part about that for me, when you watch that fight back, is when the fight's over, between the fight being over and the glove being, you know,
discovered,
how much Billy is congratulating him, but he also looks so happy, but he's had this big brawl and he got to the end. I don't know, it's just devastating to see.
Yeah. Although Luis initially denied any wrongdoing and put the blame solely on his trainer, years later, he would admit that he knew of the plans and that his trainer had done this on at least two different occasions.
I'll tell you one now, right now. He fought Sammy Horn. Sammy Horn wasn't, again, he wasn't an amazing boxer, but he was tough. And Luis slapped the shit out of him. And it was just like, hang on a minute. It looked a bit iffy. Even if you look at Luis's record, go on his box rec. Sammy Horn stands out. Like, if you look at the people he's fighting, the records of them fighters, Sammy Horn and Billy Collins, they're the ones who stand out. Yeah, he's a piece of shit.
Well, the reason they'd done all this was just so Panama Lewis could place bets on him, you know, the underdog to win. And it's just, for what?
Yeah.
Like, it was even said that Luis was a good fighter. You know what I mean? It's not like...
tough.
Exactly. It wasn't like he was never going to amount to anything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You could have earned money the right... Well, I mean, boxing's very corrupt as it is anyway.
Yeah.
But in theory, you know what I mean?
He wasn't skilled. He was a brawler.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best way I can put it. He could take...
of a prize fighter.
He could take a beating. Like, he'd walk forward.
Yeah.
And take a fucking beating just to land a couple of shots.
Yeah.
That was his style. So you imagine a brawler basically bare knuckling you. It's fucking devastating.
No good.
No.
So next we are going to talk about Benny Perrette.
Oh, this is a good one. Well, hang on. I'll rephrase that. It's an interesting, like, just tell the case.
On the 1st of April, 1961, Benny Perrette was challenged by Emil Griffith for the welterweight title. A knockdown in the 13th round saw Emil crowned the champ. A rematch was scheduled for the 30th of September, 1961. The fight resulted in Benny regaining his title by a split decision. The third and final fight took place on the 24th of March, 1962. Benny saw the weigh-in, as many boxers do, an opportunity to gain a psychological advantage on his opponent. During the weigh-in for their upcoming fight, Benny was making what was described as obscene gestures and spewed homophobic slurs towards Emil.
Yeah, because Emil was gay.
He was bisexual, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, at the time, making such comments or outing a person was not only obviously a disgusting thing to do to a person, but potentially dangerous to members of the LGBTQ community.
Yeah.
And obviously could also destroy a boxer's career.
Yep.
Around this time that homosexuality or quote-unquote homosexual activity was being decriminalized in the US. The decriminalization was brought in state by state, starting with Illinois in 1962. And the process of repealing these laws ended in 2003 with Lawrence versus Texas.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. Basically, it was kind of decided if both parties are happy and consenting, fuck off and let people live.
Yeah.
Now, even with this, it's still not considered acceptable by most at this time.
Yeah.
Christ, even today, there's still a lot of shy talks who don't accept it and want to strip people of their rights. So, with Benny's behaviour at the weigh-in, Emil nearly lost it, but he was reminded that he had trained for this and that there was no payout if he was to beat the shit out of him right then and there.
Mm-hmm.
He was told to wait until the fight, and Emil was able to compose himself.
Until the fight?
Well, the night of the fight, You know, some people believe that taking some time will allow you to calm down and reevaluate.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fair point, and it can certainly be the case. I think it can also be said that leaving something to stew is only going to exacerbate a situation.
Yeah.
Now, the fight was said to have been action-packed. And in the 12th round, fueled by Benny's hateful words, all of Emil's anger and frustration with him was unleashed. Just as the commentator uttered the words, quote, "This is probably the tamest round in the entire fight," Benny falls against the ropes, wedged in the corner. Emil was relentless, punching Benny until he was unresponsive. After over 20 consecutive hits, Benny slumps to the ground and the ref finally steps in.
What, watching that fight, you feel like you're watching snuff.
Did you watch it back recently?
Yeah.
Knowing we were doing
Well, I've seen it.
Yeah. I felt quite uncomfortable that it took the ref that long to step in.
You feel like you're watching something illegal. You're watching something like snuff.
Yeah.
I'm not agreeing with what Benny had said.
No, of course. Benny was an absolute shite hawk for saying what he said and behaving the way he did.
But it was still in a controlled environment and it wasn't controlled.
Well, exactly. Yeah. So it was initially, you know, thought or at least said that Benny had collapsed due to exhaustion. That was the general consensus here. The reality was that Benny was suffering from a brain hemorrhage. He fell into a coma and never regained consciousness. He was transported to the hospital where he died 10 days later of the brain hemorrhage. Benny's death is, more often than not, attributed to the brutal beating he received from Emil. Now, that's not untrue, but there are other factors. Between Benny and Emil's second and third fights, Benny had fought Gene Fulmer. He was knocked down in round 10 after a particularly brutal fight. And this fight was just 3 months previous. The New York State boxing authorities were heavily criticised for allowing Benny clearance to fight. The ref also faced questions as to why he didn't step in sooner. It's thought that the reason he didn't realise the severity of the situation was due to Benny having previously feigned injury. Don't know if I'm buying that after watching the footage, but...
But it's like it was different back then. You know, when you were an active fighter, you could have 3, 4, 5 fights in a year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's more common a fighter has one
mm-hmm.
a year.
Well, that's what I mean.
When they're that sort of level, when it's for a belt.
Yeah.
Once or twice a year is quite common.
Mm-hmm.
Like Mayweather, for instance. There were some massive gaps between his fights.
Yeah. But I mean, that's the thing. Like, it's not excusing this situation. This was horrific and brutal. And this fight is exactly why so many people have issues with boxing and, you know, will feel like it's just barbaric.
Yeah.
But having said that, he hadn't fully recovered from a previous fairly severe beating.
It's like, you know. Yeah, like I remember when I was a lad at school and there was a girl I was really interested in. And she didn't want anything to do with me
mm-hmm.
because I did boxing. And like you just said, barbaric. She saw it as barbaric. She went, "You're just looking to hit someone and hurt them." And I was trying to explain to her, well, no, I'm actually concentrating more on avoiding being hit.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my main focus.
Do you know, to do with Davy Moore's death?
Yeah.
The boxing-related one, not the car-related one. The Pope actually commented, the Pope at the time commented, and that was the word he used to describe it, to do with boxing in general, is that he viewed it as barbaric.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. I have mixed feelings.
I see it more as a chess game.
So yeah, I can understand
it's
that.
It's a chess match.
Yeah.
Strategy. There's so much more to it. Like, people who aren't into boxing, they just see it as, barbaric. Mm-hmm. You're just trying to hurt each other. It's an ego thing. No, it's mind games, strategy. Like,
I don't really
so
agree
much
with that,
more
though.
Into it.
I don't agree with the psychological side of it. Like, that's what Benny tried to do here. And I think that's fucking disgusting.
No.
I think
I don't mean mind games that way. I mean mind games as in,
oh, which way am I going to go?
Feint a punch.
Yeah.
you know, so you're faking to throw a punch to land another one. Mm-hmm. You're working out. You can, right, when you get in the ring with someone, especially if they land it, you know what their punch is. Like, every boxer has their punch. You get what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like I said, Chris Eubank Jr. is uppercut.
Mm-hmm.
So you straight away, you're looking for that. So your main focus is to avoid that. But then on the other end of it, right, I know they're trying to avoid, they've worked out, but my special punch is my uppercut.
Mm-hmm.
So they're avoiding that. So I'm going to do this.
Yeah. Have your secondary kind of thing.
And it's that every round. It's different. Yeah.
I mean, I think I myself have kind of mixed feelings because I try not to comment too much on stuff I don't know about.
Yeah.
You know, obviously between you and I, like, you know a hell of a lot more about boxing than I do.
Yeah.
And you have actual experience boxing.
So, like, a prime example would be Floyd Mayweather.
Mm-hmm.
Each round, if he would go in, right, if he went out into, you know, into the ring for a round and it wasn't working out for him, he would be a completely different boxer in the next round. It would be a completely different strategy, a completely different style. And he would keep doing that round after round until he found the one what was the most trouble for his opponent. And then he'd stick to that. Like Floyd Mayweather, even though he was undefeated for 50 fights, I bet he lost the first round more than he did win. Because the first round,
sussing them out.
Literally, that's all he was doing. He was feeling what the power was like, what the speed was like, what the footwork was like, everything. And then he'd go back to his corner and then he'd go out in the second round and he'd be dominating. Third round, dominating. Fourth round. You get what I mean?
Yeah.
And what I said earlier about landing two shots and then going on the back foot, that is exactly what he would do.
Mm-hmm.
People said it was boring watching him. If you don't get boxing, I can understand why it'd be boring watching him.
Yeah.
Because he was just on the back foot the whole time. But for someone who can see exactly what he's doing and why he's doing it, it's so entertaining.
Yeah.
It's like...
it's basically like a maths equation to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I do. And like I said, I don't like to comment too much, you know, because it's I'm ignorant to a lot of the facts. And I do have quite complex feelings on it. On one side of it, I'm very concerned about, obviously, the physical damage as well as psychological damage. You know, even if you're not the one injured, again, the psychological damage, you know, you've just talked about Chris Eubank and we talked about Jimmy Barry there and how much it can affect a person. You're just there doing your job, but it's still going to have an effect on you. But then the other side of me, I can still really respect a fighter and the work they've put in. And like you said, the strategy, it is still admirable in that sense. So I don't really know where I fall, but I tell you what, just from being with you, boxing influences a lot of stuff I say and do. You know, like I said, the Klitschko thing, I'll do that to you messing all the time.
Yes.
Also, I'll quite often walk up to you and go, I'll Roy Jones you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So boxing has had a profound effect.
Chocolate brownie.
Yeah.
I say that a lot.
Chocolate brownie. Yeah.
So basically, Kell Brook, he's mixed race and... in a press conference with Errol Spence, he got a bit heated.
Look it up, lads.
And yeah, he's there saying, well, on fight night, you're going to get it. Going to get one at Chocolate Brownies. And Errol Spence,
this
American, he's just thinking Kel's fucking batshit crazy. And he's like, what's a chocolate brownie? And Kel puts his fist up and went, one of these, Deb.
Look it up, lads. It is hilarious. Yeah. Yeah, your man, Errol, he was just like, what the fuck is going on?
But yeah, like you just said about the dedication and all the training and everything. You got to think, going back to Billy Collins.
Yeah.
You think of all that training.
Hopes and dreams,
not just the training for that fight.
Yeah.
You know, he was a fucking big prospect.
Yeah, yeah.
And then gone.
Blink of an eye.
Done.
Yeah.
That's a hard pill to swallow.
And at the age of 21, when you're still so young and impressionable,
Yeah. And the only thing what happened is your man got 3 years.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
It's insane.
So getting back to the story at hand.
Mm-hmm.
Years after the death of Benny, Emil stated that he does still feel guilt over what happened during the fight. Emil would later meet with Benny's son, And Benny's son told Emil that there's no hard feelings over Emil's involvement in his father's death.
Yeah.
One of the most horrifying details of this, as you mentioned earlier, Neil, is the brutal beating that led to Benny's death was televised and, you know, it has been viewed by millions of people. Millions of people have watched Benny's body, I mean, essentially become limp, slumped to the floor and him never regain consciousness. Like, you described it as it's essentially snuff, and I think you're right.
It's on YouTube, it's on Instagram, it's on Facebook.
While researching for this episode, I was able to find it fairly immediately. It's there, the full fight.
Yeah. Like, you literally see Benny. He's just laid.
He's just in the corner.
He's just laid up against the corner.
Yeah.
And you can tell he's out.
Yeah.
Like, there's no life in him, and he's getting repeatedly hit, and I mean with power.
Yeah.
Like,
over 20 consecutive hits.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the thing as well, you know,
it's like watching someone getting hit with a hammer.
It's hard from all sides of it, you know. You've got Benny who's leaving behind, you know, a wife and a kid. You've got Emil who was, I mean, in one sense, he's a boxer. He's in there to beat someone.
Mm-hmm.
He's essentially doing his job. But then he's got, again, the psychological manipulation of, you know, don't you dare say these things to me. But also the added danger, like I said, of being someone in the LGBTQ community and that fear of being outed. And then again, the career he has just accentuates it that much more.
Yeah.
So it's bad news all around. So I'm going to be honest with you, lads. While researching this, I mean, there were so many I had to choose from.
Pick any spot.
We could do a lot more episodes than this. But we're going to do two, and I'm going to end it here for part one. But next week, we're going to talk about a couple cases, but one of them, we're going to lean more heavily into the true crime side of things. But what did you think? Episode one of Deaths in Boxing. I hope you'd enjoy it because it's, well, not enjoy it, but you know what I mean. It'd be more your bit of you, as you said.
Yeah, I hope our listeners enjoy it, you know.
Do you know what I think?
It's a typical true crime case.
Well, do you know what I think? Whether they thought they would enjoy it or not, I'd say there's a high likelihood they're going to enjoy it. And the reason being is because it's something you're passionate about and you're talking on it.
Mm.
You know, a lot of the time listeners want to hear more from you.
Yeah.
Because obviously I'm telling the case and you're jumping in. People love it when you're getting a bit more involved.
Yeah, but then we also have negative comments of, will he just shut up? And it's like, okay.
No need for that.
Because you've said it, I will pipe down on my podcast. Yeah, I hope our listeners enjoyed it. I hope we get good feedback. I know it's not a typical true crime case, but I think it's still important to be told.
Of course.
You know, Billy Collins, that one devastates me. Like I said, at the end of the fight, when he's congratulating Resto,
mm-hmm.
and he just looks like he's so happy with himself because he's had a good, really good, hard fight. It's just devastating.
Well, I mean, sorry.
But yeah, like I said, you could pick any sport. You could pick baseball. The big tragedies in baseball.
That's exactly what I was... Same wavelength here, Neil. I was just about to say, initially, when we were talking about, you know, some things that have happened in sport, that's what it was going to be, an episode about deaths or tragedies or what have you, mishaps in sport.
Yeah.
And then I was like, boxing is its own fucking beast.
Yeah.
That's actually how I worded it to
boxing,
you.
Boxing, wrestling.
Yeah. Oh, Christ,
like,
wrestling.
Fuck me, we've already covered a case and it was Speedway.
Like, I don't even like sport, and we're veering that way, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you imagine American football, rugby, ice hockey.
Mm-hmm.
Like, fuck me, ice hockey only recently. Well, not recently.
That was one of the ones that made me want to do an episode on sport.
But yeah, basically, it was a guy from America, and he was playing.
Don't go into too much. You don't spoil it now.
Oh, okay. Well, there was a death in ice hockey.
I say that, but they can just go and look it up immediately after hearing you say it anyway. Yeah. Go on, go to town.
No. Oh, you want me to?
Well, don't go too.
Okay, I'll leave it there.
Something happened in ice hockey last.
Yeah, there was a death, right?
I know at least one of our listeners. I think a couple of them, but one in particular is a massive fan of ice hockey.
He'll know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and he's going to comment and give the entire breakdown. Yeah. He's going to essentially do the research for me and put it in the comments.
You could actually get in touch with him and he'll tell you if you wanted to do an ice hockey episode, go to him. Because yeah. When I was talking to him about the one I'm talking about, he told me about another one. Same thing.
Well, if he does, I'll list him as a part of the research.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah. Let's get an audit done because it's so fucking hot.
It is fucking insanely hot.
Yeah.
You got that forehead sweat going, don't you?
Yeah.
For me, it's more of a top lip sweat.
Yeah, I know you do. Gross.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
So what did he then, yeah?
Yeah.
The air-dried Chaplin.
Chaplin?
Yeah.
Charlie Chaplin?
No.
Oh.
So today for our oddity, we are going to be talking about the examination of some mummified remains found in the crypt of St. Thomas and Blasenstein in Austria. No idea if I'm pronouncing that right. I apologise. I tried it a couple of times and I just tried to speedrun it there. This isn't news to anyone at this stage. Now, the remains are of a man and they are thought to be around 280 years old. His body was described as looking as though it had been air-dried, hence the name of the oddity.
Yeah.
Wood chips, twigs, fabrics made from linen, hemp and flax, as well as zinc chloride, were used during the embalming process. The wood chips, along with the fabric, to soak up any body fluids, and the zinc chloride to further dry out the body. Through tomography and radiocarbon dating and chemical analysis, they were able to place his death as occurring between 1735 and 1780, and he was between the ages of 35 and 45 when he died. After analysing samples of skin, bone and teeth, they found that his diet would have fit in with that of a vicar in the region at the time. His diet would have consisted of animal products as well as grains found in Central Europe. His skeleton showed no signs of stress, but there was evidence of long-term smoking and bunions, which they said in reference to these two details.
Find bunions with bones.
I mean, how it's damaged, I suppose. So what they said in reference to these two details made me laugh. Quote, both wearing pointy shoes and smoking a pipe are very typical for a priest at this time.
Okay.
Yeah, fair enough.
Just priests.
Job done. Through further research, and in line with the theory presented from the samples, they were able to determine that the body belonged to Franz Xaver Sidler Rosenegg.
That's amazing.
A local vicar.
That's amazing. That they can pin it to one person.
Yeah, so obviously with the samples and all, they were like, bunions.
Yeah.
You know, pointy shoes, priest.
Did he
clearly
smoke?
Yeah. And then obviously, I'm sure, comparing it against records, but yeah, to find out it was old Franz over there.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. Say his name again.
You know, Franny.
Yeah. Franny the priest.
So, we know who the fella is. It's Fran.
Yeah.
Franny. Frankie.
Franny the priest.
Yeah. But one part of the embalming process that came as a bit of a surprise to those examining the body and piqued my interest mm-hmm. in this case, is that rectal embalming was the method used.
Rectal means arse, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, yeah.
What do you mean?
Rectal embalming. They embalmed through the rectum.
Why?
Because they could, I suppose, you know?
If you could, it doesn't mean you should.
So, through the rectum, up into the abdomen. Now, apparently, it actually did work quite well, as his body had been quite well preserved. Now, his face was a bit of a shambles, but the body was grand.
Okay.
Okay. Now, as to why he had been embalmed in the first place, it's not known, but possibly in preparation for his body to have been transported, you know, just to keep it, you know, keep...
Yeah.
You know. But, I mean, apparently, for whatever reason, his body didn't end up being transported, if that is in fact the reason. Franz's remains did show signs of disease, and it's thought that Franz's cause of death was down to severe bleeding into the lungs caused by tuberculosis. Another thing that's a bit like, what the fuck? They also found a glass bead lodged up there.
Lodged up where?
Well,
up his
through the rectum, I'm guessing probably into the abdomen, or at least on the way there. Little glass bead.
Wouldn't it be the other way? He swallowed it and it were on its way out.
I mean, it could have been, but
were it from Rosemary's beads?
Exactly. That's exactly what it was. So at first they weren't quite sure what the relevance was. They just saw this little thing like, why was this from?
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, it was later determined that it was most likely from rosary beads that it got lost during the embalming process.
Oh.
Yeah. So there you go. Rectal embalming. That's the crack there.
Well done. Yeah, well done.
Proud of that one.
I bet you fucking are.
Yeah. I initially wrote, not all it's cracked up to be, but I was like, no, it is. It worked pretty well. So yeah. I had to change that.
Well, please don't do that to me. I don't want that.
Rectal embalming.
I don't want that doing. Burn me. No. I told you.
No form of rectal anything.
No.
After death.
No.
No embalming.
Viking burial. Push me out to water. Set me on fire. Done.
Okay.
That's what I want.
What about the water cremation? You seemed a bit, you know, like that could be a good idea.
No, but that's still going to cost you. Just put me on a pallet.
Okay.
Get a pallet from local shop because they're always giving them away.
Uh-huh.
Get a pallet. Chuck it on water.
Mm-hmm.
With a tarp on it so it'll float.
Any preference of which beach or lake or whatever you want me to float you out into?
Push me out towards UK.
Mm.
Yeah, push me back to UK.
You're heading home.
Yeah. So that's something else what's just going to be haunting me now. Fucking arse embalming.
Thank you so much for listening. Find us on Patreon, TikTok, Facebook and Instagram. If you have a case suggestion or maybe even your own story, email us at mortalmusingspodcast@gmail.com.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No.